just crazy hours and crazy people, and it's nice to come here and not get yelled by crazy homeless people wearing miniskirts. I'll tell you, this is just a blessing to be in this place today. But it's a blessing to get yelled at by people too, so it's just nice to come in with people that have all their wits and faculties about them. So please remember our pastor and pray for him that his Australia trip is a good one. And pray for me. I definitely need that, and I'm grateful for your prayers. I'm grateful for the friendship and the fellowship and the times we've had together over these years. You know, it's a special group in this church. It's unique. It's a unique group and a collective group, united around one common goal and one book. And you just don't find places like that very much anymore in America. And what an emotional whirlwind, wasn't it? I mean, last week you talk about a high and a low, and I couldn't even work. I went down and we were in a bed and breakfast. We didn't even turn on the TV Tuesday night. I was a basket case. I said, let's go down to Nashville and go hiking. I need to get away. And what emotional whirlwind that was. I mean, here we had that and the play, and we don't know how the presidency of Donald Trump will turn out. But we know that our God is victorious. And all the plays are good. But this one, you know, the whole thing with that one, if that don't make you think and kind of realign your priorities a little bit, that one was a real good slap across the face, you know, to me anyways. And I was like, wow, you know, we're getting close. So that was exciting about that. And, you know, it's funny how all the politics and religion, and you talk to people, and if you work in a union environment with these people like that, there are no two things or hot buttons that will get somebody upset than that. And you just go a few rounds with people, and you talk about Hillary Clinton crimes and Jesus Christ in the same sentence, and you'll watch people's head explode out there and watch them retreat to their safe space. So I've had a lot of fun these last few weeks with some of my coworkers, and but I do believe America dodged a bullet with that one, and because provided that Hillary can't pull off some electoral chicanery, you know, with the Electoral College, and that doesn't come into play, but. You know, there was a grave danger to Christians if you got deep and look at what they did, what they believed, and in Cain, her running mate, that guy's as crazy as an outhouse rat. And, you know, I think a lot of the churches saw that. They really came out in force. Everybody, you know, was, now I know we didn't elect, he's not a godly man. I understand all that. We need to pray for him. But we weren't electing a pastor. We were electing a leader. And hopefully he'll actually do some things that are good. And I think it said 83% of the evangelicals came out and voted for him, more than, you know, if you lump that general term, than any. So in the mainstream media, the fourth estate, it's also called that, has never shown a bias like we saw before. And this is a good foreshadowing of what is to come, because you see a marching in lockstep with the orders from Obama and the White House, and how complete harmony and agreement they were. And they had planned on doing so with Hillary, and they trashed Trump in every way possible. And, you know, even after such an overwhelming victory, and it was from the Electoral College and the popular vote, and they say about that, but if you count the illegal aliens that voted and you look at the blue states, they have no voter ID. You just walk in and vote. And about 15% of the illegals in California, which is about 1.5 million, admit they vote. So if somebody tells you that in an argument, they're lying. That's not the case. They weren't Americans. So, but Trump can't get a break. Instead of Obama would be congratulating him and welcoming him into the White House type of headline, when Trump moves in, you watch. When he actually goes in there, CNN, The Washington Post, and New York Times will print and say that Trump forces a jobless black family out of their home of 8 years. I mean, that's how it'll be. That's what they'll do. And they'll frame it. And I have to admit, I'm pleased with the outcome. I bought this on eBay, and it cost me $40. It's a jar of Democrat tears. So, just kidding. I bet it's, you know, but somebody had that for sale Friday morning, a jar of Democrat tears. So, those were weaned from the reporters of CNN and MSNBC. So, they're quite tasty. And, but I got a kick out of that. So, tonight, I'd like to look at the Kings and the Chaldeans. Kings and the Chaldeans. From long ago, and look at a couple of points and how they relate to the current state of politics and affairs and leadership for America, because by looking at the past, you can see what's going to happen into the future. And I've been fascinated by history. I've always loved to look into the past and learn the lessons from history, and then also what we don't learn for it. And this historical account happened 2,600 years ago, and what happened then is more relevant today than any major news network station you're going to find because of the propaganda and programming that they have. It's not news. So let's turn to Daniel chapter 2 and step back a little bit. And you know this story well, and we'll start in Daniel chapter 2, verse 1. With one of my favorite characters of Nebuchadnezzar. All right, and in the Daniel 2, 1, and in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams, wherewith his spirit was troubled and his sleep brake from him. Then the king commanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. And the Bible kind of interprets itself in this verse in particular, because you see the you have the magicians and you have the astrologers and the sorcerers, and always an unsavory lot. And then the Chaldeans, which were kind of the wise people of the area. And if you look at on a map, the end of the Persian Gulf, and you kind of slice up northwesterly between the Tigris River and the Euphrates, that was the land of that was Chaldea. That's where Babylon was. That's where they came from. The Chaldeans were known in history for wisdom, and the wise men of Matthew 2:1 may have came from that region, from the east. It doesn't specifically say so. But that's where modern-day Iraq is right now. And they came and stood before the king. And the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show thee interpretation. And the king answered and said unto the Chaldeans, this thing is gone from me. If ye will not make known unto me the dreams and the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. Now, there's a couple of things here. And the first that dreams, at least for me, a lot of them are only remembered for a brief amount of time. You know, you can remember a dream and you wake up and it's vivid and it's real, and then you go back to sleep, go get a drink of water. Do you remember it when you wake up again, or is that just me? It fades, right? For the most part, I mean, unless it's something, but the dream fades quick, and it's only remembered for a time. This appears of what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. His dream is in. He can't remember it. He knew it was stirring. And the second thing is that if somebody is telling you, I had a dream and I had a vision right now, and this is a thing that was revealed from God, most of the time they're charismatic and they're going after your wallet. Remember that. That's how they work a line every time, that they have something special that you don't, and that's a typical charismatic playbook. So if they're going to go run that route, and when you hear them on TV or if you hear them on the radio, chances are they're going to be running with Joel's army and that whole charismatic crowd of the hallelujah, but let me fool you people, so you're not deceived by that stuff. Anyways, he said, but you think he got their attention with that statement. You'll be cut into pieces and your houses be made a dunghill. I mean, I bet that expression was like that of the CNN reporters on election night. You know, uh-oh. I mean, you talk about a countenance change on that. But he said then, if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, you'll receive gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. Now, the Chaldeans know they're in trouble, and they answered again and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation of it. And the king answered and said, I know of the certainty that you would gain the time, because you see the thing is gone from me. But if ye will not make known to me the dreams, there is but one decree for you. For ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed. Therefore tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me the interpretation thereof. Now the Chaldeans know they're in trouble. They answered and said before the king, there is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore there is no king, no lord, nor ruler that asked such things of any magician or astrologer or king except the gods whose dwelling is not with the flesh. For this cause the king was very angry and very furious and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. And he answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. Then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house. And he made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and his companions, that they would desire the mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. And Daniel answered and said, Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. And he giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. All right, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, I do want to thank you tonight for this church, for these people, for our pastor. And I ask that you bless him, or bless everybody here, that you bless our pastor, you bless the reading of your word tonight. And we'll thank you for all you do. In Jesus' name we ask, amen. And there's just lots of teaching and preaching in this chapter, and you can go out in all kinds of directions. There's just a lot of good meat and potatoes here. And a couple of points kind of jumped out at me. Is that, one, you see the arrogance of the Chaldeans. You know, they were the wise men, it seems to be apparent. And then you look back in verse 4, and you'll see that none of them are saying anything. At least it's not recorded that they said anything. The Chaldeans kind of jump at the forefront. And like the press of today, they were perceived to be very wise and knowing. You ever look at the faces on, you know, look at the programming on the new media, Charles Conkright from there on. This is the face of America. They are perceived to be wise and knowing. But the thing is, they're joined at the hip with the political establishment. They're welded together. And their livelihood depended on what? Keeping the king happy. And you look back in verse 6, okay? If ye show me the dream, ye shall receive gifts and rewards and great honor. So there's a financial reward with that. And that's what has happened with our press right now, is because, wow, you get a ride on Air Force One, you get all kinds of goodies, you get all kinds of accolades, and there's a little bit of, maybe some financial incentive to report favorably from certain trust funds and charities. And that's what is going on today in that. So the Chaldeans kind of like the press of the day. And also that the king was aware of it. You look at verse 9. He was aware that they had prepared a lying and corrupt words there. And then the next thing about those them and how kings behave, when they weren't useful to him, what happened? They're ready to kill him. All right? The king has no use for the press, for his stooges, for his associates that work on him when the power is absolute and the wrath is kindled. And that's why Stalin, Lenin, Trotsky, and then Saul Alinsky called the press and the impressionable youth useful idiots. And that term is very fitting today. That term was invented in Soviet Russia to describe young people that, regardless of the atrocities committed, how many people were executed, how many people were tortured, how many people went to the gulag in Soviet Russia, they committed atrocity after atrocity, and they still supported the government. They were supported socialism, kind of useful idiots. And today that just refers to the brainwashed kind of leftists and liberals that we have all over our landscape. And that are kind of misinformed and naive and ignorant of fact. You think about it, if all I've been drinking in this jar is a big, you know, bottle of wrong my whole life from the time I got in the school system, all I'm going to know is wrong. All I'm going to know, I've been consuming and drinking every bit of this stuff. It doesn't register. So it's real easy to make fun of liberals and really get angry with them, but they've been indoctrinated and they can't, to the point where they can't even see the truth. So when you're dealing with them and facts, they have a tendency to react emotionally. The other thing is that Nebuchadnezzar, who's, you know, he's a type of Antichrist, displays the attitude of the leader who has absolute power. And the problem is, once the power of state is achieved, then the state eliminates the press and any useful idiots that got them there. It's off to the gulag, it's off to the camps, it's a bullet in the head. They no longer serve a purpose. And because they can put somebody into power, they're a threat, and usually they get rid of them. Now let's go And look back to verse 19, and it just says, Daniel blessed the God of heaven, and then jump down to 21. And he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom to the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. You try telling that to a liberal, that God sets up a king and God sets up a leader, regardless of what you like about it, and watch them lose their minds. And we have an effeminate spirit and teachings of the church today from an effeminate Bible, and not this one, but all the other ones, that has led youth in America and Europe particularly to be physically and mentally weak and spiritually blind to the truth. I mean, you look back in our history, in June 6, 1944, thousands of young men, barely older than you guys sitting right there, the ages of 18 to 22, went onto the beaches of Normandy and parachuted into France, and 2,500 of them died in one day. The average age of a World War II soldier was 26. The average age of a Vietnam soldier was 22. A lot of them knew they were going to die, and they went in and they did it anyways. On November 9th, 2016, thousands of young men and women stormed the safe spaces of college campuses all over because their tears and fears needed to be comforted. And this is how far we've come. And the stupid on college campuses never ceases to amaze me when you deal with people. And if you hire young people, it's just amazing. You know, we've always had a regular level of stupid. You deal with that. Just go work in a construction site and you'll see that. But, you know, you got garden variety stupid, and then you get people that are a special kind of stupid, and then you get weapons grade stupid. And that's what you're dealing with now on a college campus. It's just weapons grade stupid. They come up with terms. Think about the terms. I remember they've got names for us, but now there's a microaggression. Microaggressions. So an aggression would be, like old Mark McGahee said about Facebook. He used to say, if you've got a Facebook account, your nose is big, your feet stink, and you don't love Jesus. Now, that would be an aggression, and he was making fun of stuff and joking like that. Now, that would be an aggression, aggressive statement meant to be inflammatory. A microaggression might be, if you have a Facebook account, you need to realize possibly that everything you posted on there has been developing a personality profile because a lot of this was developed by the CIA. Well, you've hurt my feelings about that, you know. So it's not quite as blunt as your nose is big and you don't love Jesus type of thing, but you get the idea. So they've created this concept and safe space that you can't offend them anywhere at any time, and they think they're entitled to that stuff. You got a bunch of pansies you're dealing with here, folks. University of Michigan, I kid you not, okay? So guys, marry tough women. Women, don't marry pansies, all right? Don't do it. Don't even think about it. The University of Michigan offered traumatized students coloring books and Play-Doh after the election. I kid you not. I'm not making this stuff up. Not Play-Doh and coloring books. The University of Kansas reminded the kids that were stressed out about the election that they had therapy dogs there to come and comfort them, that they could go to rooms and pet therapy dogs. Cornell University is an Ivy League school, of course, and Ivy Leagues, you know, that's really special. They held a campus-wide cry-in. And they had officials and teachers handing out tissues and hot chocolate in case you needed to cry. So, like I said, I've got the tears right here. Tufts University offered its arts and crafts offered arts and crafts sessions if you needed to relieve your stress by arts and crafts. I guess paper mache and snowmen or something like that. And I've got it on my phone. One of the guys I work with, his daughter goes to IUN, and they sent out an email and said that you can go to room 207 or whatever if you're troubled with the results of the election and you need a comforting person to talk to. In a space to grieve, I kid you not. So, and across the cities of the country right now, you see, Mary and I were talking about this earlier, you know, the riots and that are going on. And even that stuff is controlled. Remember, this is all part of a bigger plan. This is, a lot of these people are paid by Soros. You can get on Facebook. There's a $35 an hour fee they're charging for it, okay? To come and pay and protest on that. 70% of the people who are arrested in these riots aren't even from the city that they're rioting in, and most of them are out of state, and they didn't even vote. So what you see on that is not the case, and don't be deceived by this stuff. There's a purpose that they want to have. So don't be deceived by the protests, and they're as fake as the sentence that come from the politician's mouth. That's what socialists do and what we're facing in the country. There's a few facts for the young people, and I'm going to pick on you guys for a little while tonight because you're the future of the church, the generations of what's coming on. And when you look around and you see the people out there on the social media and stuff, you know, there is a fact that you are unique. You can look at each other right there, and you can look at your friends, and you are unique. But you're not particularly special. Your parents might think so. And you may have a Facebook profile with 100 selfies on it that you've got, you know, of you eating food or going to pizza, and you've got your head tilted and makeup on perfect, and you're doing that. But you know what? There's 7 billion other people like you. 7 other billion. And nobody really cares about your feelings. I guarantee you, if you're upset about something, nobody cares about your feelings. Not one bit. Second point is, when everybody gets a trophy, no one knows how to lose. There's winners, there's losers. All right? So when you come across that, the people have been raised by a helicopter parent, and everybody thinks that you get a participation award or something, that they're entitled. That's an attitude that's fostered. When you guys go out and you young ladies go out, you get into a college scene, this is the kind of insanity you're going to deal with. And if you haven't really been exposed to it or understand what they're doing, you're vulnerable to be co-opted. And a lot of the kids are lazier than a tick on a dog's hind leg. They won't do anything. They won't work. They run from work by a scalded cat. Next thing, young people, life is hard. It's tough. It's tougher when you're stupid. Study. Stay smart. In life, cars break down. Loved ones pass away. Second jobs have to be gotten sometimes to pay bills. But I got news for you. When life and troubles happen, you don't get a room to go cry in to pay your bills. And you don't get a pony. That isn't part of life. You have to deal with it. You got to suck it up and tough it out and do the best you can. Young people, you can't always get what you want. Your parents aren't Santa Claus, and the good fairy is not going to deliver a new Xbox for you just because you want it, all right? Nobody owes you anything, all right? There's a satisfaction in hard work. There really is. And delayed gratification, and that's something people don't know. And a lot of these kids have absolutely no concept of what it is. And this is kind of the spirit and mentality we're dealing with a little bit. Young people, a career as a professional victim leads to a bitter and miserable life. You can't blame others for your actions, all right? That's what everybody does. It's somebody else's fault. Saul tried doing that, all right? Adam tried doing that. It was the woman's fault. You gave her to me. Look what happened. We've been blaming our wives for stuff all the time. Ever since then, my wife isn't here, I can say that. But it might work on a safe space in a college campus, but in life it doesn't happen. And being a special little snowflake or buttercup might work on Facebook for you, but it fails in real life. And that's why about 30% of students in college campuses are on antidepressants. Think about that. One in three people you meet needs a happy pill to get along, okay? And your future, your wonderful little girlfriend might be halfway into a crazy house by then because of the detrimental effect that stuff has on the brain. If somebody tries to sell you young guys on that, you've got a problem. I'm stressed out. I'm disturbed. Let's go to the college psychologist or psychiatrist or something like that, and they have these great little benzodiazepines that'll help you out. No, it's altering your brain chemistry, and withdrawing from that stuff is harder than alcohol, because when you go off of that stuff cold turkey, it can kill you. Literally kill you. That's why you have to wean all that stuff off. I'm picking on the young men so you don't come out and be professional victims or idiots or anything like that. And why do I mention all this stuff? Because there's no new thing under the sun. And look what happened in the days to Israel and in what is happening here. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 3, verse 12. Isaiah 3:12, and flip over here for just a second. All right. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy paths. And what do you see here? This was happening, and I know this is judgment upon Judah and Jerusalem, but what do you see right now when you look out there? You've got young people beating older people because of their political beliefs. There's no respect of the elderly anymore, and they're attacking them left and right. And what do you have? And women rule over thee. And I'm not talking about your wives. I'm talking about the politicians like we had and the attacks like Feinstein, Hillary, those people. What they have is a spirit of Jezebel. That's what was going on. That is a judgment back in then, and that's what's going on now. Now we go back to Daniel for a second. Let's look at the darker side of behind the scenes in our political arena. And you look back and you're like, why are things such a mess? Let's go back to Daniel 2. Daniel 2:2, the king commanded the magicians and the astrologers, now we're getting a little short on time, and the Chaldeans to show the king his dreams. And they came and stood before the king. The political leaders of that day and of now, what were their advisors? They were magicians. They were astrologers, they were sorcerers, and then the Chaldeans, who were the best of the sorry lot, were advisors to the king. And then I'll just go there because I'm talking long and running low on time. Well, if you go over to Isaiah 47, verse 12, and it says, "Now stand now with thine enchantments and the multitude of thy sorceries. wherein thou hast labored from thy youth, this show it shall be able to profit that thou mayest prevail. And then it talks about, thou art wearied with the multitude of thy counsels. Now let the astrologers, the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators stand up and say thee from the things that shall come upon thee. We tend to take in lightly enchantments because we've been programmed by Disney with the magic, the fairy godmother, the pixie dust sprinkling and things like that. We don't tend to look at this stuff as serious as what it is regarding enchantments and that. But an enchantment says, oh, they're enchanted with this girl, he's smitten with her or whatever. This is, you know, the act. You look at the noun and you look it up and dig it up in Webster's 1828, and that's the act of producing a wonderful feeling or effect by the invocation and aid of a demonic force or demons. That's what an enchantment is. Okay, use of magic arts, spells, incantations. Now you flip over a little darker yet. You look over to Leviticus 19:26, and this is interesting because of what's lumped in with it. And it says, ye shall not eat anything with the blood, neither shall ye use enchantments nor observe times. Now you notice how eating things with blood and then enchantments are also in there, and then observing times are lumped in that same verse. You think you have a black mass, Halloween, you've got times that are observed all around the country as high satanic holidays, things like that. How about the regular mass? You think about that. Every Sunday you have a billion people in a certain religion that are taking wine, and they're saying that this becomes the literal blood of Jesus Christ, literal blood, and they're drinking that. And then they're taking a cracker and they're saying, behold thy God, and holding that up. And they're saying that that's the literal flesh of Jesus Christ, which is cannibalism. And then they say, you know, my Lord and my God. Then what's he saying? Stuff in Latin over that. And it's a process of transubstantiation where that's converted into the literal flesh of Jesus Christ. That's an enchantment. That's what that priest is doing. It's an incantation. It's over that whole thing. And notice that the sorcerers and astrologers and magicians are using enchantments to gain influence over political leaders. And throughout history, the black arts have always accompanied politics. There has always been that side of it, and understanding that. You go back in history and you look at Rasputin, for instance. He was the mad monk that was the right hand of the Tsar of Russia. And he helped kind of weaken his character spiritually and emotionally so that he was blinded to see the revolution that was coming. And what was the result? The Tsar's family was wiped out to the end so that a communist revolution could occur. And this enchantment spirit, it didn't die with Nebuchadnezzar. It didn't die with Rasputin. It goes on. And it goes on in both political parties. There are things that came out with WikiLeaks that I can't even mention regarding what's going on, but they revealed a great deal into how the occult is even playing now with the campaign managers and a guy named John Podesta. And he would be like the equivalent of the Chaldean, the wise men of the time. And then this lady named Maria Abramovic would have been like the equivalent of the sorcerer of the time. Now, Podesta was the advisor to Hillary, the closest advisor, everything on that. He was hanging out with this lady and who was famous for spirit cooking. All right? Don't go there. All right? But spirit cooking is done by a lady that stands there and holds literally the goat head that's been with the skin peeled off, and that's a symbol of a satanic religion. Anybody knows the goat head is a symbol of Satanism and all that. But the ritual is basically a sacrament of the religion of Thelema, which was founded by Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley was probably the most famous Satanist during the 1900 to 1947 period of time. So what you have is a very bizarre painting ritual that is entirely occultic that the chief advisor to our almost president was a part of, and this is using incantations and demonic forces for wisdom and everything else. Thank God that did not prevail. But that stuff is still going on today. You guys, you young ladies out there, if somebody is trying to and tell you that a Ouija board is cool or the pentagram of power in your video game is cool or stuff like that, you need to take that stuff serious. You're dealing with some wild things that are out there. And you wonder why things are so dark. One of the tricks of occultism is to hide things in plain sight, all right, because you can't see it, but they can see it. And the symbols all over in our country have different meanings. And for example, you look at a pentagram, you know, it's on our flag. It's a five-pointed star. And when you look at a star, the top of the star is the Spirit. And then I think you have air, water on the two sides of the star, and then earth, fire. That's the representation of what's going on. And when you take that star and you invert it, what are you doing? You're turning the Spirit upside down. And the whole idea of it is that now you have the spirit of man is subject to the earth, the fire, and prone to carnal desires. It's the spirit of Lucifer that's in that. The pentagram is a unique thing. It has five sides. Satan said, I will, five times. The interior angle, where the pentagrams and the angles meet, is 36 degrees, which, is, of course, is 6 times 6. And if we wonder why things are such a mess, when Trump mentioned draining the swamp, the entire area of Washington, D.C. is one giant occultic layout. Some of you guys may know that, some of you don't, and nobody's really gone that way before, but I figure if somebody gets mad at me, you can anyways. Because all the streets are laid out. As a surveyor, I've been in cities all over Chicago, Wisconsin, last. There's nothing out there like D.C. Nothing. Streets aren't laid out that way without a purpose. And first of all the streets are in giant inverted upside-down pentagram. There are circles at the points of the pentagram and critical crossings. In the Book of Magic Symbols, it talks about the circle is the most important unit in the occult, all right, and the symbol of magic symbolism, because it's intended to denote spirit or spiritual forces. And that's where those go. So when Isaiah 14:12, when Lucifer said the five I wills, he was talking about, I will send out of heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God, I will sit upon the mount of the assembly of the uttermost north. Our beloved is north. That's where he wanted to overthrow him, where God is situated. So in occult theory, power is transmitted from the north. And you wonder why it's a swamp, why the leaders in D.C. are so corrupt and political. This is the layout. Get on Google Earth and look at it. And what you have, I didn't connect this last line. I didn't want to actually draw one. But this line, this street, these are streets in Washington, D.C., all right? Get on Google Earth and take a look at it. I'm not lying to you. You can see it. It's as clear as day. You have, I think this is DuPont Circle, Scott Circle. You have Logan Circle. I can't think of the name of this square. It's on the east side of the pentagram. This is Washington Circle, Connecticut Street. This is K Street, I think. But the reason this stuff is such a mess is that the Big Kahuna, the whole thing, 13 blocks north of the White House, is the Grand Lodge. The Holy Grail of Freemasonry sits here. Okay, behold, my beloved is north. In occult teaching, they believe that the power flows down through the tip of the pentagram, and at the base of the pentagram, where the streets would go, is the White House. So that the White House is always under a direct spiritual occult attack at all times. And it gets a little weird. So what about Congress? Well, the symbols of the other things, if you go to study Ed Becker's stuff, the Mormons, the Mormon magic underwear, they have the square and compass stitched over their underwear on the breast of the clothing, and I told you about that. But over here would be the where Congress sits, all right, on the east side of that. So you have the White House, and then south of the White House and slightly east, you have the Washington Monument. And then in line with this, you have the Lincoln Memorial. And what you have over here is you have where Congress is sitting, and Congress has a compass where the roads were laid out at its base. There's the compass, you see. Like, and now we do it in CAD now, but used to, you had a compass to spin angles and check angles and things like that. And then the square, your construction framing square, formed a point. Now, where you would line the center of the compass and the center of the square of the streets and ride these lines out, and then you would draw these out. All these things are spaced out very methodically and very carefully to form, I think they call it a triple tau. It's a cult symbol with the links here to form like a triple tau in this kind of a line. At the head of Washington, or at the memorial up here, there's two ears. They look like ears. They're the shape of an owl, okay? And that's what's on our dollar bill. So if you wonder why D.C. is such a mess and why they're under the influence of this thing, it's because if you the whole idea was that they laid it out so that the power of the occult would always be over our leadership. And, you know, like I said, you don't go ahead and look it up. I mean, I'm not making up the streets. You can look it on Google Earth, and it's just, it's right there. You know, and in Street View, and you look at what's in the circles, it's signs of the zodiac. There's all kinds of stuff in there. So our political debacles and scandals and our general wickedness that's going on, you know, isn't all by accident. And it's by careful planning and erosion and of our spiritual foundation. You know, America was a great Christian nation, and that we had it. And it's been a slow process, a grinding process of divining deviancy downward. And as we ponder these things a little bit, we really need to pray for our leaders. We're at a crossroads where things could have gone irrevocably bad, and we're hoping and praying that, this leader we have now needs our prayers. We go back to Daniel chapter 7, or Daniel chapter 2, verse 47. And then we'll finish up.